This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's a Natural Solutions Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio. I'm not in the studio with you.
This is nature-based Glenn Ayers.
well, nature-based Glenn Ayers, the term natural solutions has been coming up quite a bit lately here in the Commonwealth of Massachusetts. Oh, at Elders Climate Action. There's a natural solutions working group, and at the ever dubious Nature Conservancy, they were quick to co-opt the term for their own corporate ends, presumably. The Cornell Lab of Ornithology was paying attention during COVID, but what about here and now as the climate crisis ramps up and bogus or no solutions press in on us? Marta Vicarelli, Assistant Professor of Economics at the University of Massachusetts Amherst, joins us to explore the obvious. Okay, how about a quote of the week? I think this one here is appropriate for this show. Quote, climate change isn't an issue to add to the list of things to worry about next to healthcare and taxes. It is a civilizational wake-up call. Powerful message spoken in the language of fires, floods, droughts, and extinctions, telling us that we need an entirely new economic model and a new way of sharing this planet, telling us we need to evolve. Close quote. And that was from Naomi Klein.
Yeah. You know what they say, evolve or go extinct. We are part of nature, not separate from it. And that's the key to being part of and entering into a relationship of self-defense. If you're part of nature, you're going to defend that part of yourself, which is part of nature. We need to keep proselytizing that message. And there's no better way to do it than to evolve and find a better way of relating to everything that is out there in the natural world.
Yeah. And on that note, it sounds like a good time to move to our interview with Marta.
Yeah. So we're going to be talking about nature-based solutions. And we kind of use the shorthand phrase natural solutions for that. But this is a more scientific approach, and we'll be talking with a researcher who has determined, and you know, we'll let her tell you, but she's determined that from an economic standpoint and really from a reality standpoint, natural solutions are, I'm going to say, my feeling is much more effective and actually exist right now for addressing the climate emergency. So let's get into that interview. We'll talk about it on the other side. So today on the Enviro Show, we are joined by UMass researcher Marta Vicarelli. And Marta has recently published a kind of a review paper on nature-based solutions. And they're sort of comparison to engineered solutions for reducing climate risk. And Marta, if you could introduce yourself and then tell us about this. It's a pretty comprehensive, pretty broad scale analysis of sort of a database analysis or a document review of the literature from many, many studies. So if you can explain how this study was done and then tell us about nature-based solutions and what's so great about them and why they're really economically feasible. And, you know, we may have a few questions to ask about your findings and how they apply. This is academic, so how do they apply to the real world? And we'll get to that. But first, introduce yourself and welcome to the Enviro Show. Thanks so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
First of all, thank you for inviting me. I'm really honored. So my name is Marta Vicarelli, and I'm an assistant professor at the University of Massachusetts Amherst. I have a joint appointment in the Department of Economics and in the School of Public Policy. And I wanted to mention this because while I'm working in economics, I really think that my work has important policy implications, and I really try to produce work that can be valuable to society. And in fact, this is more or less how this study came to light. Before becoming a professor, an assistant professor of economics and public policy, I actually studied geosciences in Europe. And my focus was climate change. And I realized while I was studying that there was a big problem, and we really needed to find solutions very quickly. And my realization was also that the bottleneck, the problem, was really an economic and policy problem. We needed to find the right economic incentives to fix the climate crisis. And that's why I started studying economics. I've also worked a lot on climate impacts. I spent some time working as a researcher at NASA, and then a series of universities focusing on climate impacts on ecosystems, on physical systems like glaciers, for example, and then on human systems. I looked at the impacts of climate change on the cognitive and physical development of children in developing countries. And then I got a bit sad, and I thought we really need to start thinking about the solutions. And I decided to start investigating nature-based solutions and their potential usefulness. So are they useful? Are they not useful? If they're useful, are they cost-effective? Can we afford them? How do we adopt them fast? What do we need to adopt them fast if they are helpful, useful, and cost-effective? So that's basically the motivation behind looking at these nature-based strategies. About 10 years ago, I started working with several researchers in Europe. There was a lot of research on this in Europe already 10 years ago, or at least the beginning of a wave of research. And I kept collaborating with these researchers. We published an article in Nature Sustainability back in 2021. And this study was the first study to present the scientific evidence for ecosystem-based disaster risk reduction. What does it mean? At the time, we surveyed a very large number of studies trying to determine whether the use of nature-based solutions for disaster risk reduction was efficient, so if it was helpful. Is it helpful to use ecosystem-based disaster risk reduction strategies? And that study showed that nature-based solutions are effective in decreasing in reducing the impacts of an increasing number of hazard events. So this is just to say that basically that paper and that study was the first step of the study that you are mentioning, and this is the most recent publication that we published a couple of weeks ago, where we look at the cost effectiveness. So essentially in 2021, we had the first study that showed that these solutions are helpful. And then the next question was, okay, are they cost effective? Does it make sense for governments and private sector to invest in these solutions to decrease disaster risk? Maybe if it's helpful for our audience, I could mention, I could describe briefly, what do we mean by nature-based solutions? So these nature-based solutions are actions to protect, I'm now using actually the United Nations Environment Assembly definition. So these are actions to protect, conserve, restore, sustainably use and manage natural or modified terrestrial, freshwater, coastal, and marine ecosystems, which address social, economic, and environmental challenges effectively and adaptively, while simultaneously providing human well-being, ecosystem services, and resilience and biodiversity benefits. So this definition, as you can see, has so many elements to it. So the first component is that nature-based solutions include not only the conservation, the protection of existing ecosystems, but also the restoration, the sustainable use and management of both natural and modified ecosystems. And the additional element in this definition is that essentially these actions to protect, conserve, restore, sustainably use and manage ecosystems address a variety of challenges, social, economic, and environmental challenges. And there is an adverb that is used, which is that these solutions need to address these challenges effectively. And there is another adverb, which is adaptively. So we need to adapt to the changing conditions of our planet. And the ultimate goal is to provide human well-being, ecosystem services, and resilience and biodiversity benefits. So essentially, nature-based solutions may have a primary immediate goal, for example, reducing disaster risk or increasing climate adaptation, but they also have additional benefits, and both to humans and to the environment, for example, increasing biodiversity. With this definition, essentially, we, in our study, in our recently published study, where we look at the cost effectiveness of nature-based solutions for reducing disaster risk. In this study, we screened more than 20,000 peer-reviewed articles, meaning articles that were published in academic journals and that underwent peer review. So we screened more than 20,000 peer-reviewed articles that performed in a quantitative economic assessment of the benefits of nature-based solution interventions. So that was the requirement for an article to be in our review. And after multiple rounds of review, we created a database that includes 87 articles. And we use this database to assess the cost effectiveness of the nature-based solutions analyzed in the articles in the database. We looked at multiple dimensions. So we looked at the type of ecosystems, restored, preserved, or sustainably used and managed. We looked at the geographic distribution of the nature-based solutions. We mapped them. We wanted to understand, where are these nature-based solutions being implemented? Is there any heterogeneity in terms of distribution of nature-based solutions at a global scale? We also looked at the type of hazards mitigated by the nature-based solutions, the source of financing, so who pays for it, who paid for it, who paid for the nature-based solutions analyzed in the studies in our database. We also looked at the property rights of the nature-based solutions. By property rights, we mean who has ownership or right of management of the ecosystems analyzed. Are they public land? Are they private land? We wanted to understand the property rights structure of the ecosystems considered. And then we looked specifically at the cost effectiveness, so the results of the individual studies in the database in terms of cost effectiveness of the nature-based solutions analyzed. And finally, the last bit was to also determine, based on the articles in our database, whether the nature-based solutions were compared with engineering-based solutions. And if they were compared, whether they were more cost-effective or less cost-effective or comparable in terms of cost effectiveness. So this is a little bit of the methodology that we used, and I'm happy to share to provide a glimpse at our findings.
Marta, this is Dio. I have a question for you. You mentioned property rights, and my ears pricked up. On this viral show and in our daily activism, we've been very active over the years trying to get government officials, especially here in Massachusetts, to understand the advantage of allowing public lands to capture CO2 emissions and store the carbon undisturbed by logging or other forms of activity. Frankly, you know, we're very concerned by their seeming lack of understanding and action. I mean, again, these are our public lands. So I'm wondering if you run across in your research resistance towards natural solutions.
I have to say that it seems that there is a lot of support right now. But there was, so I have to say the environment seems to be very conducive to the adoption of nature-based solution at the moment. In Europe, for sure. And I can also comment in the US at the federal level, there has been, there have been actions from the Biden-Harris administration to expand the use of nature-based solutions. I don't know if it's helpful, but I can provide links to you if you have a website where you post resources related to the interventions. I'm happy to share links with the documents that were published by the Biden-Harris administration in this regard. So I think that the environment, the policy environment is very supportive at the moment. I haven't seen pushback, but it's a good question because one of the roadblocks for the upscale and the scale up of nature-based solutions was the question, are they cost effective? And this is the reason why we developed this study. We wanted to know, are they cost effective? There is actually ample knowledge, anecdotal knowledge of the benefits of these interventions, but we wanted to have to provide a document that is a peer-reviewed article where we review peer-reviewed articles to show what the scientific evidence is about cost-effectiveness. So this article was very well received because many were wondering about the cost-effectiveness, and now we have an answer. I think it was very important to produce this document, this article. And my goal more than producing an academic publication was to produce an academic publication that was helpful to policymakers and practitioners. I really had practitioners and policymakers in mind while I developed the methodology with my co-authors. The question, when we performed the survey, we also asked what are the barriers that municipalities encounter to develop strategies, not only nature-based solutions, but in general, to develop strategies for climate change resilience. So possible barriers that complicate, slow, or prevent the implementation of climate change resilience plans. And what we found is that lack of municipal staffing capacity is the number one problem for both cities and towns. 91.7% of towns indicated lack of municipal staffing capacity, and 85.2% of cities indicated lack of staffing capacity. So essentially what we are seeing is that climate change related problems are growing and they are requiring a lot of resources at the municipal level. Something else that emerged in the survey in terms of barriers is, and maybe you have seen it in your municipalities, maybe you can confirm, is lack of grant writing capacity. So this lack of staffing capacity may translate also in lack of grant writing capacity. Writing grants is very time consuming. It requires resources. Sometimes municipalities have to outsource the activity to consulting companies, private consultants. So it's a resource intensive activity. And this means that poorer municipalities may not have the resources to apply for grants and then to adopt resilience strategies, including nature-based solutions. So that's a roadblock that we have seen emerging from surveys and focus groups. Another concern of municipalities in terms of barriers is the lack of competence or expertise to address complex climate issues in their municipality. And I think it's totally understandable because even at the academic level, climate change is a very complex problem. And I can only imagine how daunting and challenging it might be at the municipal level, especially for small municipalities, to plan, design strategies, and assess the success of those strategies. What metrics should we use? How do we measure progress? What is success for us? How do we then expand or implement strategies? So it seems that, and this is, I don't know if I'm answering your question, but I think one challenge, even at the on the academic side, and this is a challenge that I think is emerging across the spectrum in international organizations, government agencies in Europe, probably in the US as well. How do we measure the progress in terms of nature-based solutions? How do we measure their effectiveness? How do we compare? How do we then expand in the most efficient and effective way? And how do we streamline so that we can help smaller municipalities with less resources to adopt these strategies efficiently and also quickly, because we have a ticking clock, basically, which is climate change. So these are all good questions. I hope I answered a little bit of your questions.
I think one of the things that you pointed out that we are very aware of here in the western part of the state is that we have many small municipalities that I would use the word lack the sophistication or the expertise or the competency, whatever word you want to use, to write those kinds of complex grants and administer those grants, which are often very dense requirements for reporting and tracking and the paperwork and everything. And then we also have a lot of small municipalities that have a surplus, if you want to say, of nature in the western part of the state, in the Berkshires and the Connecticut River Valley, and even in the mid part of Massachusetts. And yet, you know, that is kind of, it's limited by the staffing or the access to expertise for those same communities. They're rich in nature, but they're poor in resources, or especially financial resources. And so, you know, that's where the state, I think, can help by focusing more on helping communities. And I think the example that strikes me is that the focus for climate monitoring has been very focused on industry, greenhouse gas emissions, the electric sector, transportation, heating, and those are all kind of tangible things that can be measured. But when you get to nature-based solutions, they're, like you said, they're much harder to measure and they're much harder to verify. And I think that that's where, you know, we've had our focus for a long time on the built environment or on the manufactured energy system. And what we really need to do is put in equivalent amount of energy into focusing on the natural world and nature-based solutions, especially in my belief is land conservation protection and permanent protection, so that we can ensure that those lands will be helping the climate and not just for the short term, but for long term. I'm talking about a long term investment, especially in land protection or restoration. So is that the kind of message that folks can take from this discussion and talk with their local officials or their state elected officials and advocate for those kinds of policies that will help enhance the application or the implementation of nature-based solutions at the local level, you know, through the state providing those kinds of resources?
So I think one thing that we found in our article is that the benefits of nature-based solutions are underestimated. Because as you mentioned, it's a good point. We are having a very hard time measuring all the benefits. Because unlike, for example, an engineering-based solution, a nature-based solution provides benefits to biodiversity, but it can provide also benefits to health. It can provide benefits to in terms of recreation. And from an economic standpoint, the cultural and spiritual value of a forest is still an economic value, but it's very difficult to measure monetarily. So all these benefits are not benefits that you are going to find in an engineering-based solution. So I can tell you that on the academic side, that's what we're working on, in trying to estimate in properly the economic benefits of nature-based solutions that are currently vastly underestimated. And yet, even if they are vastly underestimated, we already find that they are at least as cost-effective as the engineering-based solution, and in many cases, more cost-effective. Something else that I wanted to mention is that at the global scale, we found in our article that the majority of nature-based solutions is publicly financed. To have a really transformative effect in terms of impacts of nature-based solutions, we are going to need public-private partnerships. So I think that it's very valuable and important what you mentioned, which is informing local leaders, public officials about the benefits of nature-based solutions, or at least considering, inviting them to consider nature-based solutions. Nature-based solutions, in order to be effective, should be well designed within the planning of a municipality or an area with a long-term vision for that area. And I would also like to mention that it's very important local participation in developing nature-based solutions. People have to have ownership of the nature-based solution. They have to have ownership of the intervention. There is no conservation without people. That's something that a good friend who works in an international organization told me. He used to work in the field in developing countries. It's totally true. It applies everywhere. We need to have the participation of local stakeholders for successful programs. At the same time, I think that on the academic side and the in our field, we are trying to explore also ways to develop innovative financing mechanisms so that the private sector is also able to participate in the financing of these interventions, because it's possible that the public sector may not have sufficient funds to expand in a transformative way the use of nature-based solutions. And if it's something that can give a little bit of hope to everybody, the insurance sector and reinsurance sector are two very large sectors and that are also very interested in exploring nature insurance. So the use of nature-based solutions to find sustainable insurance strategies. So I hope this is helpful and this answers your question. But definitely, I think it's important to bring up, especially at the local level, the possibility of using nature-based solutions.
Yes, so we've been talking with Marta Vicarelli, UMass researcher, and I think what everyone needs to be working on and focusing our energies towards is restoring the degraded areas, protecting the current areas that are doing a lot of work for society, And so I want to thank you for being on the Enviro Show and for bringing this information to our listeners. And we've linked to your profile at UMass and this research on our blog. And I just want to thank you for caring about the environment and bringing this information to the public, so and policymakers especially, so that they can make informed decisions.
Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really grateful. And I hope that your audience will not feel too distressed about climate change, but knowing that there is a lot of people that are working on solutions. And I think we can find solid and sustainable and inclusive and just solutions altogether. And I wanted really to mention that luckily, if this can give you a little bit of joy, luckily after we published this article, we got very positive feedback from policymakers in Europe and in the US. I was contacted by the White House. There is really great interest. I couldn't believe they read our article. So they really care about understanding how nature-based solutions work and the possible expansion of nature-based solutions. And it's been very energizing to see how many different fronts are working on solutions, including humanitarian organizations. The Red Cross is heavily studying climate change and nature-based solutions because especially after conflict or after major disasters, there is not proper recovery unless the environment is healthy and thriving and supporting the local populations. So there are so many different players that are trying to invest and understand in sustainable strategies that gives me hope, and I hope it gives it to others as well. And that study that I was mentioning now that we are trying to finalize soon is looking at these strategies in underserved communities in developing countries. But I'm mentioning this because we found that nature-based solutions here in the US, in Europe, can be very supportive also for the needs of underserved communities in our countries. And so I'm crossing my fingers, but our team at UMass, together with some scholars at Taft and UMass Boston, we submitted a proposal for habitat restoration of the wetland above Boston, so Romney Marsh, that would support 5 underserved communities with low levels of income, high levels of morbidity and mortality, legacy pollution. So this is something that we can really think about in terms of how can we improve things for our communities through nature. Can nature help us on many different fronts? It can. And hopefully we will get the money from NOAA. If we don't, we will keep working on the project in a different way. But
when you take theory and put it into practice, that's really important.
Thank you. Thank you so much again for inviting me. I'm really proud of being in your show. You do a great job.
Great.
All right. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was interesting.
Yes. I think that what we have to look at is sometimes there's a lot of research being done at universities that is a theoretical or has no direct application to reality. But in this case, this is the kind of research that does have a direct connection to reality, you know, nature-based solutions. Nature is reality. And so we need to be able to take that information and interpret it and then apply it or bring it to the policymakers, make sure that they're aware of this and try to influence their decision-making process. Because there's lots of research that shows that nature-based solutions are the way to go, but we have to convince the policymakers and the funders, right? We have to convince them that this is what we should be putting our money toward and not toward building dikes and seawalls and channelizing things and, you know, doing those engineering solutions that actually destroy nature or separate or compartmentalize nature away from the human interaction. So I think that, you know, we'll continue to follow this kind of approach, and hopefully this research will be expanded so that there'll be a way to actually measure the full benefits of nature-based solutions, not just the things that are easy to measure, but those things that are more intangible or difficult to measure.
Yeah, I think the problem, though, is, you know, it's not business as usual. And so the younger audience will probably be more receptive to this.
Yeah, I agree.
Okay, I think that's it for this one, Glenn.
Yeah, one more thing, remember.
Well, to listen to your mother. Okay, this is Dio saying adios.
And this is Nature-Based Glenn Ayers saying, get involved, get active, folks. Take care.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.